Intuition, I feel like, is almost a very, it's a hard word to like grasp when you aren't familiar with it. So I think for me, it's synonymous with like trust.
This is the Alchemized Life podcast, and I am your host, Ava Johanna, a woman on a mission to bring wellness to the world. This podcast was created to bridge the gap for anyone craving more love, health, and happiness in each and every day. And with every episode, you will receive practical guidance to create magic in your own life. Combining the expertise of wellness visionaries and thought leaders, each week we will bring it back to basics and provide you with the tools meant to empower you to thrive emotionally, physically, and spiritually. So together, let's ditch the mean girl, you can't sit with us vibes, grab your favorite yoga pants, and start to find your uniquely alchemized life. Hi guys, welcome back to the Alchemized Life podcast. I am your host, Ava Johanna, and I am so excited that you are here today to listen to this amazing conversation with Kate Van Horn. So I first met Kate through Instagram figures and immediately fell in love with her bubbly energy. And before I knew it, I was attending the Good Fest in Los Angeles and got to meet her in person. Kate is such a powerhouse and empowering woman because her story just resonates with so many people so deeply. And you can tell just by the way that she connects with people on Instagram that she's the real deal and she really cares about everybody that she interacts with. I really love this conversation because we talk so much about community and how the Good Fest came to be and really how to create that type of community in your own area. I think it's really important that we are able to find our people and be able to be vulnerable with people and create connection that is more than just a screen in front of us or going out to party. Not that that's bad, but just something deeper than that. And in this conversation, we really get into what that means and how to do that for yourself. So I'm really excited for you all to listen. In other news, as you may have heard in the first episode, if you haven't already listened, go back and listen to my intro with Kaylee Alyssa, but I am putting together a $2,000 wellness giveaway for the launch of this podcast. Now, I won't go through all of the brands because it is a complete mouthful, but you're getting products from Anywhere Nutrition. We have skincare. There are clothes, swimwear, jewelry, candles. There's powders. There's MCT oil, CBD. So you're literally getting everything to just have the most badass wellness life ever. And I'm so excited to be giving it to you. So if you want to see the full list of brands, you can head to my Instagram or you can check out the show notes for this podcast. But all you have to do to enter is rate, subscribe, and review the Alchemized Life podcast. For extra entries, you can take a screenshot of your review and post it up on your Instagram story and tag at Ava Johanna so I can see it and just know that you are listening and you're here and you want to win some awesome goodies. So really, really excited. I'll be announcing the winner on July 2nd in the fourth episode of The Alchemized Life. So stay tuned and I hope you enjoy this episode. Welcome back to The Alchemized Life podcast. If you've ever felt alone when it comes to the sparkly world of wellness, today's guest will inspire you to continue down your radical path of self-love and find your people. So Kate Van Horn joins me today, and she's the blogger, recipe developer, and registered yoga instructor behind katevanhorn.com. Formerly known as She Be Killin' It, Kate recently rebranded and stepped into her personal power, utilizing her blog and social media presence to promote health through mindful living, intentional movement, and a body positive message. Now, Kate is a total badass and a huge inspiration to me when it comes to wellness, creating community, and being real even when the entire world is watching. You may even be sipping her infamous Starbucks matcha order without even knowing it. I know I was yesterday preparing for our interview. Yes. So you're passionate about candidly sharing your eating disorder recovery story as a way to connect with your community and set an example that radical self-love is possible. You're also the co-founder of a wellness events business, The Good Festival, which is a one-day event for 400 plus women in wellness, which we'll dive into today. I have been to The Good Fest, and I have to say this event blew my mind and inspired me beyond belief. So I'm so excited to welcome Kate Van Horn to the Alchemized Life podcast.
Thank you. I have chills. That was like the sweetest intro ever.
That's awesome. Yeah, my favorite thing about podcasts is the intro. So I'm like, I got to make sure, like I said, I'm welcoming Beyonce.
Oh my gosh. Well, she is like goals times a million. So
I know. So I think one of the things that I actually wanted to start off talking about is your rebrand, because ultimately, you know, I rebranded as well. And when I saw that you had, I was super inspired. And that's kind of what started me on the path of like, okay, well, should I do this? You know, there's so many different ways or reasons why we stay under a persona or why we kind of step into our own name. So I'd love to hear kind of the background as to why you went from She Be Killin' It to Kate Van Horn.
Totally. So thank you for asking, because it's really something that took a long time to be like, all right, am I going to do this? Am I going to go for it? And I'm so glad I did, because I feel 100% myself, which is funny because it's now I go by my name. Imagine that. But when I started this, it was really just meant to be a creative outlet, something fun. I was only really posting food. My focus and message was about food. So I wanted to have a cheesy pun, and I was in my corporate job at the time, and my coworkers would laugh because I always brought kale salads. And my dad used to always sing like, "You'd be killing them" to me whenever I would do something like funny or well. And it was like our joke. And I was like, "She'd be killing it." But then obviously that evolved to things like the Good Festival. Also my personal interest evolves. Like I really realized that in order to, for me at least, to promote eating disorder recovery and a body positive message, I felt like constantly posting food was not the way to go about that and was not going to be the healthiest way to serve that community in particular. So I started showing just my lifestyle in general, and it wasn't all food focused. And I knew I was going to start yoga teacher training, and it just, my interests evolved. And I just felt like I had finally, especially after the Good Festival, the second one in LA, had really established myself as more than just like a fun food account on Instagram or a blog. You know, I kind of felt more like an entrepreneur, of course, a yoga instructor now, and it just felt right. So that was kind of the reason behind it, but it was scary. And I know too that if anyone's thinking about possibly rebranding, you have to go with your gut. And I'm sure we'll talk a lot about intuition today, but you know, to be honest, if I kind of stayed the path of like posting and following the like formula, I would maybe be larger than I am from like an audience standpoint, whether it be on Instagram or my readership. But I had to think long term, and I knew long term I couldn't sustain that style of content forever. So
that's so powerful. Like I have chills right now, goosebumps all over, because I feel that so hard. I mean, there is like this formula and all of these different blogs that tell us that this is what we should do. And like we were saying before we went on air, you know, there's a lot of people popping up, and how do we become innovative? And I think that it's intuitively following, you know, the things that we're really passionate about and know that we will be able to maintain longevity with. So I think that that is so cool. And it's really just so empowering to see you stepping into this place of owning your name and who you are and the things that you're doing. So, I love it.
Everyone loved She Be Killin' It, that name. Like I got a lot of people being like, I love this username because it was funny. And if they understood the song reference, but then now I get messages and it's like, wow, you have a really powerful name. And I'm like, thanks.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. So that's awesome. Yeah, of course. So you mentioned you had started during your corporate job. I know that we both come from a marketing background. So what made you decide to leave your corporate job and start to enter this world of green juices and comfy yoga pants?
And all the good stuff.
And all the good stuff.
Literally. Well, I kind of always knew that I would, you know, and I feel like a lot of people are saying that, like entrepreneurship is so cool now. Everyone's like, I knew I was an entrepreneur, but I really did. I mean, I was struggling in school from a really young age, and my parents were like, what's going on? We know you're intelligent and capable and amazing and talented. Why are you just like not caring? And I just never cared. I couldn't get on board with it. And then in college, the same thing. I was always working a lot. I had a lot of internships. I worked for a wedding planner. I worked in a lot of hospitality jobs. I loved like the hustle. I loved being busy and hands-on and talking to people and being in it. But class, not so much. And I just kind of would always say, like my parents would ask as I was like working on a sociology degree, like, what's the plan? And I just knew I wanted to work for myself. So when I took the first job I had, it began as an internship and then they hired me on. And it was in social media marketing for pharmaceutical, biotech, and life science companies. Mm. So very dry, and social media was very different at the time. This was in 2014, early 2015. I mean, for clients like that, it was really Twitter. Like, that's what that's code for. So it was not amazing. I loved my coworkers. I learned a ton. I didn't go to school for business, but I felt like being in a creative agency of only, I think there was only 8 of us total, I saw not only like the creative director and the owner, but also like what the graphic designers were doing. And then I got a chance to see what the web programmers were doing. And I saw like the way it all worked together. And I found that very interesting. And I knew for a long time that I was very like multi-passionate. I don't want to do the same thing every day. I wanted each day to look a little different. And I thought that was cool. The idea that marketing and different clients and different goals can make your day not feel like mundane like that. Mm-hmm. So as I started my blog, I was like, this is awesome. I can explore photography. I can create recipes. I can obviously market myself and my brand. And it just was like light bulbs were going up. And I thought this might be something I could actually make full time. So I would work on it at night. I would work on it on the weekends and really dedicate the time to it, which I think is important to note because I think a lot of people want to start something and then they think that it's like, oh, I just got to quit my job and go for it. No, you need to kind of build up to that and really commit essentially your free time and your leisure time to be working as well. So I had other things that I had thought about doing before and other projects and side hustles, and they never stuck. And I knew they weren't right for me then, because it's like, all right, if I'm not willing to give up that free time as well, then it's probably not something I feel like quite enough passion about. So anyway, long story short, I realized that creatively it was tough to juggle the marketing agency as well as my blog if I ever wanted to make it something substantial. So then I started nannying just part-time. And what I loved about that, it felt like a step down. I went from like a salaried position to that I had only had for about a year. So I was really giving up like a position that was could have been a growth experience. And I started nannying. There I had the ability to like just be present with the kids and then still have time when I got home to be creative and not feel like I had used that on client work. So that was really nice. And it was different. I was physically exhausted from running around with kids, but I was able to come home and like give my blog and my brand more attention. Then around that same time was when I met with Jess and Jen and we started the Good Festival. So what began as like, I'm going to become a blogger really morphed into something different and still continues to, but solo entrepreneur is now the route.
That's awesome. That's so cool. Yeah. So at what point were you feeling, okay, I can leave my job and feel okay with all of the work that I'm doing on the side? Because I know that there's a lot of fear that comes up for people that do want to get into this industry, because most people don't want to just, they do want to leave their job and just quit cold turkey, but they feel very scared because I think that there's so much lack mentality written into our society about money that they just never take that leap. So at what point, what was that feeling that you had?
Well, a few things. So there's a few, like, I think everyone has to kind of assess their current situation. I think for me, I had only been a year in. My starting salary was like still relatively low. Like I wasn't used to really having a huge amount anyway. Like I was still super young. It was right out of college. You know, you're kind of still in that mindset. I still don't have kids or like a mortgage. It's like if any time was the time, I think it was then. And I know that the longer you wait, the more those things pile up and it can get very frightening. And I totally understand and hear that. So I think a part of it was that when people asked me this question, I didn't feel very fearful. And the reason I think too was I had gone through treatment for my eating disorder in college. And then again, for PTSD and trauma when I was at the end of college. So my first round of treatment was the beginning and then the last one was the end before I graduated. And it just was like, I had gone through so much, can I curse?
Yeah.
Shit. I'd gone through so much shit. And I was like, I just want to be happy in what I'm doing. Like if I'm not feeling it, I don't care. So I think like when you've kind of overcome something that feels even more daunting than necessarily that. Like, I knew I could find another job again. Mm-hmm. I knew that my very, very fortunately, my parents would never like let me completely fall, you know? And I was still in that place. And I said, you know what? I got to just do what makes my heart sing, because I had essentially had those 4 years in college that had been really, really rough. And I felt I got to do this for myself.
Mm, that's so powerful. I think that that's such an incredible awareness to have that a lot of people really have to develop over time. That kind of leads me to my next question, though, because you have an entire website or a section of your website dedicated to recovery, which is so valuable for thousands of boys and girls that really struggle with disorders. So outside of your writing, were there really any pinnacle moments in your recovery that aided in the healing process?
Yes. Yes, yes. There were two that I can think of. And when I speak to women and men who thank you for being men, because when I was in treatment, there were guys there too. I always say there are like two recoveries. There's the one of the body, and then there's the one of like your thoughts and your mind, essentially. So in the beginning, it's kind of just stopping the behaviors that are destructive, like, you know, the restriction or anything like that, maintaining a healthier weight and getting kind of back, stabilizing in that sense. So that's kind of like recovery of the body. And I feel like that's kind of the first thing you think of when you think of eating disorders. And that's kind of step one. And then from there, I started to work on what the core beliefs were that led me to use those behaviors in the first place. So that was more of the work and the therapy around anxiety and depression and things like that. And wondering, why is it that I use these behaviors to manipulate or control, to feel better and essentially to numb out? So those are the two. And then with each, I had kind of like a moment where I thought, okay, something's got to give here. And the first was I was in treatment and I had amazing resources accessible to me. I was going every day. I was seeing therapists, nutritionists, doing groups, but I wasn't like really listening. I was just kind of like going through the motions, doing it because I knew my family wanted me to, and I wasn't committing wholeheartedly. They picked up on that there very easily. And they were like, she's not open to it. She's not receptive to it. And I remember my very best friend called me and was just like crying. And she was one of the strongest, like most tough ass, like girls. Like, she'd always been such a badass, like all of our lives. And she always like stuck up for me. And she had just like, she broke down crying. And she's like, I really need you to do this. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay. And then I kind of settled in, like, I'm going to give it a shot. And I don't know what it was, because, so, you know, other people had been begging me, but something about my friend just being so like, shook by this and just seeing me and knowing I was hurting. And I was like, okay, I'll give it a chance. And then, so that was round one. And then the second is really recovering, like from the thoughts and the patterns, was yoga. Like, so finding yoga, and I always tell people my yoga practice started so humble. It was in my bedroom with YouTube videos, like nothing fancy, no Instagram poses, no cute clothes. Like, I just was getting on my mat. And I think it was, you know, by going through a yoga practice that I finally felt like I knew what it felt like to be in my body. Like, I knew, I started to notice like what my body was capable of. And I was like, okay, I'm going to speak to it with love. I'm going to nourish it with good food and just love, for lack of a better word. Cause it's when I was in those postures, I finally like for once felt rooted in my own body.
Mm, that's so powerful.
So yeah, I just thank it all the time. Like, to finally become mindful when you're so disconnected from what that means, grounded and mindful and present, it's like, whoa, your eyes just open and you're like, holy crap, this is a much better way to live. So yeah, those were kind of the two pivotal moments. And the yoga practice was one that kind of completed the recovery and made me feel like, okay, I could sustain this and I could be in recovery forever. Like, this could be the new way of living.
I love that. I really love that. So was there a certain type of yoga that you entered with when you were in your bedroom just starting out?
Just vinyasa flows, really, because I had always had a dance background. So I would just Google, you know, things on YouTube. And I loved when it felt really free flowy, because that just reminded me of dance. And I missed that a little bit. So that's how I started. You know, I'm trained from more of a power background. But I really, really try to bring like that element of flow back, because like my super like type A personality needs that as much as possible.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I totally feel you. I tried bar the other day and that was a challenge.
It's tough. It's like the most like precise little movement. And it's like, can we just like have some fun and let go?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I was like, I can't hold this ball between my legs. It was great. So, you know, I feel like recovery is kind of, it's a never ending thing. So are there tools besides yoga that you still use up until this day to, you know, make sure that your mind and your body are on track?
Definitely. So definitely meditation. But that's, you know, kind of a part of yoga too, moving meditation and then the more like what you picture, like seated. And then journaling for sure. I love that. When I need to really tune in, I try to write. And yeah, I would say those have been the biggest. And most importantly, finding a community and others who you can talk to. I think that it's impossible to go about it alone. So finding the people, the friends, the family that you can turn to, especially when you're newer in recovery as a support system, and to have those check-ins is really important.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, everyone wants to help too for those that are in recovery. So I think that it's just allowing that help to be received. I know you said that when you had first started and you were in treatment, you were just going to go, but weren't really listening. And I feel like that's something that I struggle with sometimes. You know, we're only going to be as ready as we are to listen. And sometimes exactly. It's just in one ear and out the other. So finding a balance with yourself and then also with other people that are struggling too.
Totally. And I think, you know, I have a lot of women who reach out about this, and you know, yoga was what worked for me, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's for everyone. I think the most important thing is willingness. I think mm-hmm. that it's not going to happen unless you're willing and you show up 100% for yourself. So, and believe that you're worth it.
Yeah. Yeah. Worth is a big one. So let's talk woo-woo. What is your favorite woo-woo wellness hack that you have going on right now in your life?
Right now for woo-woo wellness, I mean, I'm always just using crystals. I mean, I feel like that's probably the most woo-woo thing I do. And people look at me like I'm wacko. In addition to that, I mean, Palo Santo and Sage, I use it every single day. Journaling is not necessarily woo-woo, but I think the way I go about it is, for example, I will pull a tarot card first and then journal based on what card I pull. I don't find that I can really tune into myself or get creative if I just kind of ask myself, like, what's on your mind? I need something to kind of like bring me to that place. So those are like my three tools that I use the most.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'm the same way. I can't just start like free writing. I definitely need some sort of prompt, or I'll start writing after meditation, something like that. So what are your go-to crystals right now?
Really loving carnelian for creativity and second chakra, which I'm always working on. Then I love, let's think, I mean, amethyst is just so beautiful to like meditate with specifically. I also keep it by my bed too. I have trouble remembering dreams. I'm not like a very vivid dreamer, but I'm very fascinated by dreams. Like when I do have a dream, I like look it up immediately. So I'm keeping that close by. And then selenite, which is just so nice. It charges the other crystals. It's like, you can just hold it and like almost cleanse yourself with it like you would sage. So I love that one.
That's awesome. Have you heard of, I might butcher the name, lepidolite?
Yes,
it's it's a purple stone and it's good for dreams. I've had some like crazy dreams though, and I've kept it next to my bed that I'm like, all right, I see you.
That's awesome. Yeah, so Trine's another one that's like so beautiful and just like so positive. It's crazy. I mean, I think like people are kind of skeptical of them. Like my boyfriend was when I first started like bringing all these rocks home. And I think more than anything, it's just like a little piece of Earth's energy. And we are so, especially if, you know, you and I live close to cities, like we're so disconnected from that because it's like we're on our phones, we're on our laptops, we're in our cars. And it's just to have a piece of Earth's energy near you is just really grounding.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think also, you know, intention that is put behind it. So yeah. Even if you don't believe that it carries any energy, it carries your intention. And I think that's
a visual reminder.
Yeah, too. Exactly. Exactly. That's awesome. So outside of the crystals, you said that you use Palo Santo or Sage. So if someone first time ever using Palo Santo or sage, what is your ritual to use with it?
So I love to definitely, okay, so if I travel or like go away for, if I'm in the city all day, like obviously a trip, but also even just if I'm out and about and like going to a lot of meetings and things like that, I will definitely come home and sage myself. I like to sage myself before meditation, in the morning. I just will sage the whole house. I'll sage the plants. I mean, it's really whatever you feel needs some cleansing. I mean, I sage my tarot deck. It's just kind of like whenever I need to check in. When I do my physical yoga practice, I'll use the Palo Santo more. Mm-hmm. Like that seems to work better for me. And then the sage will be more to like either start or end my day on a more positive note.
That's cool. I love that. So speaking of, you know, your day, do you have any non-negotiable daily rituals that you just won't go to sleep without doing at some point in your day?
Definitely just movement of some kind. It doesn't have to be yoga. Like that's something that's been really, really eye-opening to me was to learn that like walking, living, breathing can be your yoga practice, which is really, really nice, especially for those days where it's just not realistic to get to a class or get to your mat. So I do have a home practice that's almost every night, even if it's only for like 10 minutes, but just getting quiet, sitting quiet for at least a moment or two, and then movement of some kind. So like I kind of go in spurts. Like lately I've been going to the gym a lot because I just feel like I have a bit more energy and it feels really good to release it. And then I walk my dog like 3 times a day. We get outside. Being outside is really important to me. Very grounding for me. So I find that like those little things and breaking up my day with pockets of movement, even in between like calls or something. I mean, I have the flexibility and the luxury to be able to just roll out my mat and take a break from work. So I really take advantage of that and I'm really, really grateful for it.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, working from home, you might have longer hours sometimes because you just keep going, but it's so nice to have the flexibility literally to get on your mat or just go move. I've been finding that a lot with my practice too, that it's not really yoga asana that I've been craving lately. It's been other types of movement and it's really cool. And I think liberating to say, you know what, like it doesn't have to be the physical postures. I can still live my yoga by doing other things and just being more mindful and present. I think that that's a really powerful place to come to, especially, you know, in our digital world, when we can get caught up, especially in the wellness sphere on Instagram, seeing all of these people and their beautiful yoga poses. I know I've struggled with a lot of guilt because I'm not as bendy as other people and it can be a lot of self-worth can come up. So do you have any tricks that have helped you to detach from comparing yourself to others on Instagram and social media?
It's so hard. I mean, it's like, I think digital detoxes in general are so important. And to be honest, I mean, I'm going to say something that I don't necessarily practice. I need one soon. I did one time for like a full 30 days take off. This was more in the beginning and it was so helpful when I first started my account. But I think it's important to set aside like at least 1 or 2 days a week where you can take off the pressure of creating first off. Like I definitely don't necessarily put up new content every day because I don't have the energy for it and it wouldn't be my best. It wouldn't reflect my best self. But in addition to that, disconnect from all the scrolling and the looking. I mean, you just have to sometimes go on airplane mode and really give it, despite how tempting it can be, give it your best effort to step away. I think too, like for me, when I first started yoga, I like started really humbly and from a very, very great, well-intentioned place. And then I started to get kind of ego-driven and I started to like, you know, I kind of dipped my toe in the water and I was like, this is cool. And then I started to like research more about it and look into accounts on Instagram. And I was like, holy crap, these women can do these insane things. So I started to practice towards that rather than just like practice to practice. So then I actually like noticed that happen and took a step back from yoga altogether for a solid like 6 months where I just kind of, I left it for a little while and didn't know whether or not I would like explore it again. And then eventually I did. But in that time too, I kind of stopped unfollowing those accounts. I always laugh with my friends. I'm like, I'm a yogi and I don't really follow many yoga accounts unless I have like a personal connection or reason or something that brought me to that person besides, you know, their physical practice.
Yeah. Yeah, like absolutely.
I resonate with you as a person.
Yeah. And I mean, even me, I'm not really posting that much yoga anymore because I just don't feel it. And I think I read this book. It's called The Science of Yoga. Highly suggest it because yoga teachers just need to know it. But I'm seeing so much stuff on Instagram that is like making my blood curdle because people are practicing wrong. And a lot of people look up to it and want to emulate these Instagram yogis that have these beautiful practices, but all of our bodies are different. And there's so many poses that are contradictive to most human bodies. And it's just, it's kind of scary. And I think going back to the she be killing it, we don't want to pigeonhole ourselves into something and only be representative of that one thing, especially if it can be a little dangerous to a lot of people.
100%. Yeah. I like that you said that too. I recently had, so I'm working with a mentor kind of program for an extra 300 hours because my 200 hour was very like, I don't know. I mean, it was great from like safety and alignment standpoint, cueing. It was just structured. I mean, the spirituality was kind of lacking. And that's what I was missing and kind of the creativity to like veer off of what their formula was. Mm. So I met a woman named Nina who is working with me one-on-one, and she and I were reviewing something, and I asked her about chair pose, and I said something, and she said, get into chair, and I did, and we were, and then she's like, you just look uncomfortable, and I was like, yeah, I am, and then she was like, can you just put some, like, bring your stance wider, and I was like, yeah, I feel better, but that's not chair, and she's like, who told you that you have to have your feet together? Like, it was just that power kind of, like, mentality that I had trained in for like months now, where it's like your feet are touching. And it's like, no, my body didn't want that. My hips are wider. I need space. And that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the media perpetuates so many different things, whether it's yoga, whether it's, you know, a vegan diet or raw diet, a paleo diet. There's so many things that are perpetuated by the media, and there's so much noise that how do we really know what is correct without us trying and then finding what feels good in our bodies?
Totally.
Yeah.
Gotta try it.
Yeah. Along that lines, it's really coming from a place of intuition, whether it's movement or the things that we put into our body. So how do you use your intuition to make decisions? And how exactly, for people that don't necessarily know how to use their intuition yet, how do you tap into that space?
Yeah. So it's not easy to tap into. I think it's really about finding like a perfect in between of like an emotional decision-making process and a logic, and that little like sweet spot in between is kind of where intuition lies. I try to just associate, if intuition I feel like is almost a very, it's a hard word to like grasp when you aren't familiar with it. So I think for me, it's synonymous with like trust. And I think that like, whenever you get that feeling of like, this just isn't right, this just isn't quite what I want it to be, you have to trust that. So I think trust too, in relation to like, for example, intuitive eating is like one of the most complicated like relationships. And I think everybody's like, well, how do I achieve it? How? And it's really just trusting. For example, if I say no food is off limits, you know, I have freedom around food. Some people will immediately look at that as like, oh, well, she's telling me I can eat anything and everything. And no, that's diet mentality, because reality is when you have true food freedom and intuition, it's like you can trust that you will recognize your hunger and fullness cues. You'll trust that you'll know what your body needs. So start there and start believing that your body has the answers. I think we like, again, like what you said with media, it's like we think we know the answers and that this guru or this like doctor does. No, I mean, you just need to trust that you, regardless of if you have like a scientific background in nutrition, can know what, am I thirsty? Let me drink some water. You know, I think we just so badly want to be told like the right way, because that's easier to follow a formula. And it's like, it's just not that simple, unfortunately. And it's going to ebb and flow. I mean, like I said, this week I'm going like really hard at the gym, but some weeks I'm so positive that I can't and that I don't have the energy and I have to listen to that.
Yeah. So intuitive eating and food freedom, those were actually big topics at the Good Fest, which is your 400 woman festival. That was
a lot of women in the room.
So it was incredible. I mean, just to kind of set a scene for people that weren't there, it was this energetic feeling of community and women coming together, all wanting to learn from each other, support each other, and really take the things that they had learned within that space out into the world. And I know that that's what I felt leaving, you know, for complete transparency. The moment that I left the Good Fest, I was like, I want to start a podcast because I need to find these people. Yeah. So here it is. The Good Fest did it.
That's amazing.
The Good Fest did it. Yeah.
I love that. I think, I mean, there's so many like opportunities and things, and like it's all accessible to us because of these phones and the devices that are sitting in our hand all day long. It's like, we can really access so many more people and spread a message like far beyond what we could have before. So why not? Like, why not do it? And there's so many different like tools and vehicles to go about it. So I think a podcast is perfect for you. And I'm so pumped that you did this.
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, ultimately, like you said, there's certain things that there's this formula that we can follow that maybe will get us a larger audience. But ultimately, like, was I able to blog 2 times a week, every single week for the next 6 years? No, probably not. But having conversations with people is just so empowering and leaves me like feeling electrified. So one, I'm so excited to have you on here to, you know, talk about the Good Fest, because I think that it's something so new to this world that is so desperately needed, especially for women to come together in this really pivotal time. So did you have any idea that the Good Fest would expand to the size that it is and reach cities like LA?
No, I didn't. I mean, when we got together, it was really meant to be for Philly, to give back to our community. We felt like our city is kind of this odd, you know, we're nestled between DC and New York, and it's like, we're kind of like forgotten sometimes, to be honest. So I think we were seeing all these cool things happening in these cities, and we're like, it deserves to happen here too. And we knew that the market was primed for it. We just didn't know how much. We didn't know that, like, when we would put tickets on sale, that Philly would show up in such a way. And then when the brand started wanting to be a part of it, and when we were able to secure like really amazing speakers, people, women who I'm just like in awe of, that they'd even answer our email and they're speaking and headlining at our event. It's like, holy moly, like, we have something that is needed. And I do think, I mean, with every business, I think it's a lot about timing. I think that the timing was perfect. And I think that women needed this, not just for their health and wellness and, you know, to get their green juice that day, but truly to be a community and to serve one another through supporting one another. And I think we, in every conversation, when we first started planning it, made it very clear that this was like not a one size fits all kind of festival. It wasn't a boot camp. It wasn't a yoga festival. It wasn't a vegan festival. It was like, come as you are, come where you are, and we'll meet you there too. And we'll just have an amazing day. Like, it doesn't need to be this way or that way. So that was kind of like the intention behind it. And then our decision to go to LA was really just a personal challenge. I think, like, after the first festival, we were so stoked to just have done it. And we were like, screw it. Let's really go for it. Let's go for a city. If we can do LA, we can do anywhere. That was our feeling. And we had been to LA a couple times for like conferences and expo and stuff like that. And we felt like, obviously, it's inundated with wellness. There's plenty there. But that kind of like, that realness was maybe lacking a little bit. Like, I hate to necessarily say that LA is a certain way, because I mean, I don't live there, and I know 100% I've met amazing women from LA and the West Coast in general. It's just something about the vibe of the way events are marketed sometimes just felt like it could use a refresh. And we were like, let's be 3 Philly girls and be the ones to shake it up. So we went for it. And the response again was amazing and just really humbling. I mean, we had a ton of people travel for both events, which is also really crazy to me. So it's just really sick.
Yeah, it's so dope. I mean, I was just so energized. And just talking to you now, it's just so cool to hear about it, because my whole thing is, we need to meet people where they're at, because this whole wellness revolution is awesome, but if we don't have people at the forefront of it that are going to bridge the gap for other people that might be intimidated, then what's the point, you know?
Yeah. And you probably see that all the time teaching yoga. It's like someone who comes in and doesn't have any background or knowledge in it, like, could so easily be turned off and intimidated. You need to hold that space for them to be like completely okay where they are. And it's like, and just, I don't know, offer that like as equals, you know. I hate that whole feeling of like being taught, you know. I'd rather just be like a community as we explore it together, which I think the Good Fest is, that's kind of the way we try to approach it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the intimidation is a big thing that people are feeling right now. And for you to have pulled off an event so well in LA and in Philly with no intimidation. I mean, my mom came with me and she was so stoked.
Did she love it?
She had the best time ever. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Oh my God, I feel like our moms would be friends. My mom's like the Good Fest biggest fangirl.
That's awesome. Time. Did she come? She didn't come to the LA one?
Not LA. She came to Philly and she was like right front row. But that's awesome. When you told me you were, actually, we get a lot of mother-daughter duos. I think it's a really great experience. Like, especially if you have like, if you're new to wellness and you like love it and you're maybe exploring it for your career, like I feel like I hear from women a lot that their parents like don't get it or their significant other doesn't get it. I'm really fortunate, and it sounds like you are too, to have like a family that's like, they are familiar and they love it and they do it in their life as well. But it's fun to introduce someone to an event like this because they can like understand why you geek out over the things that you do and just see a little bit, a glimpse of what your interests are. I think that's really important.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, she was crying by the end of it when Kelsey Patel led us all through the meditation. She was just so happy. And now she's saying that she wants some sort of event like that to be a monthly thing. So,
oh my God.
Yeah.
Well, she has to come for our others and would love to have her. That's amazing. So many people were crying in Kelsey's session. It's hard too, being like, when you're planning it, Jess and Jen and I say this all the time. We're like running around, we have like headset on, and it's like we're like there and we're overwhelmed with like not only like logistics of it, but how things are going. Like I remember I was in the yoga room during Kelsey's breakout session and Jen texted me and was like, "You have to get in here. Literally everyone's crying." And I was like, "Oh my God, it's amazing that like, you know, in this room Nicole was doing a yoga class and like, it was a completely different vibe. And just in the room next door, something like so powerful was happening. It says a lot about our speakers and their ability to take what's a very stimulating space and experience and really be so in it that they can, for their 45 minute session, bring you to a totally different place.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, I can't wait to go to the next Good Fest. So, you know, as amazing as the event was, I'm sure that there were some challenges along the way. What was the biggest challenge for you creating an event at this scale?
I would say it's a lot of checks and balances all the time. I'd say that that's where we have the most time spent, is always making sure that we're balancing, especially when an event of this size requires funding, to be honest. It requires sponsors. And obviously you want them to be happy, and you want also the experience of the attendee to be number one. So it's always like these gut checks where it's like, is this the right fit? Is that the right fit? How can we make this work? How does it feel still authentic and us, regardless of these, you know, other voices coming into play? So while it's challenging, it's a good challenge. It's something that feels exciting and like it's awesome, you know, when a brand or a speaker or someone wants to be a part of it. It's just important to continuously be mindful and check into like the true messaging and stay true to that no matter what.
Yeah, absolutely. So for those that, you know, haven't been to the Good Fest or maybe won't be able to get to the next one, but really are seeking a community like that, what advice would you give to someone that really wants to be able to create community and find that connection within their own space?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that community is everything. I think it's time to get offline. So I would say, even you don't necessarily need to be ready to throw a full festival. I would say go out into your community, find like the coffee shops and the studios that are your favorite to go to, and ask if you could exchange like putting together a meetup, or like if you're a blogger meetup is awesome. If you're a yoga teacher, offer a community class. Just start to get out there and see who you can meet. Also switch up your routine. I think women especially, it's very hard to make new friends as adults. It's hard to put ourselves out there. But if you are somewhere, say like at a restaurant you love and you see, and you guys are both eating lunch, like try to go for it and say hello and introduce yourself. Like you can come from the place of like, hey, I saw you're working. Like I too, you know, work from home or work on my own schedule. Like I think it's just important to find those moments and in the area in your community where you feel really comfortable and just keep introducing yourself. And then online too, I think a lot of people are meeting, like I know a lot of Philly bloggers and stuff, and they might DM me and then it's like, let's actually meet for coffee. Like let's take it, let's go get a green juice. Let's go and not just let this conversation live online. And then kind of my last like tip is actually podcasts. I cannot believe how many people I've been able to connect with through being on podcasts. Like I did a podcast once with my friend Christina, and you know, it's like we're able to have a conversation as if we're in the same room together, and then others can hear it. And then I would get messages from people who resonated with something that was said. And it's just really fun to see it all pieced together and become, you know, a true community and unit.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, social media can be scary and daunting, but it has given us so much power to be able to connect with people in ways like we never have before. And I think it's important to note too that like, yes, it's scary to put yourself out there, but the person on the other end is just another person looking for connection as well.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's the thing. It's like, what is there really to lose? I think we, too, like, as we grow and evolve and our interests change, I mean, I think we get stuck in like our bubble and our group. I have friends that I've had since middle school and I love them so much, but maybe they're not into wellness. And like, I need someone to like spitball ideas about Instagram with and talk about the festival. And so it's important to evolve and allow yourself to let new voices in. And you learn so much. The more you connect with new people, it's like, and hear their stories, it's really cool.
Yeah, absolutely. So I know that there's a lot of people that are going through a transformative time, and I'm sure that a ton of people that are listening, you know, are interested in wellness, but maybe moving through the space of having friends that might not be on the same level as them. So mm-hmm. I'm sure you've gone through that. While you do keep friends from middle school, I'm sure some people have fallen to mm-hmm. the wayside. So how do you disconnect in that way or detach from that energy without, you know, mm-hmm. depleting your own energy?
Great question. I mean, boundaries are so important. It's like so important to create those. I mean, it is hard. Like when someone energetically, you're not necessarily vibing in the way that you used to. And this is going to sound like kind of a typical yogi response, but it's like, come from a place of compassion, you know, just because you, and don't try to look at yourself as like the more evolved, like well being, because it's certainly not the case. It's just notice and acknowledge that we're all on different paths and we're all in different spaces, and that's okay. And that's totally fine. And with that, you can protect yourself. You can set boundaries around how often you hang out and still be respectful of the fact that this is a person that's been in your life for a really long time and you care about them. And it's, you know, I still keep in contact with people I used to work with and all of that. And sometimes there are huge differences in the way we live, but it's like, looking at their lives and not judging based on my life, you know, and vice versa, like just kind of being really, truly compassionate to the fact that we're all on different journeys and paths and that's fine. And then protecting yourself as well energetically and coming home and using that sage and being like, I'm really glad I'm no longer in that negative thought pattern and I'm not in that lack mentality anymore or anything like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what you said is so true. We are all on different paths and not all of us are going to turn into, you know, wellness junkies and yeah. yogis that practice every day. Like we all have different paths and that's okay. And it's cool to all be unique because if we were all doing the same thing, then it wouldn't really be special.
Totally. And that too, I mean, to kind of go off of that, it's also okay to like cut the yogi crap and just talk like about normal stuff, you know, like talk about movies and stupid reality TV shows and like just be silly too. I think that that's when people like meet me, it's like, I don't always talk about that stuff. Like it's part of my brand now and it's part of what I hope to build. But there's definitely like days when I just want to eat a pizza and watch the Kardashians. And I think that that's what's like really important too, is just to be authentic in both sides.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So the Kardashians is your favorite reality TV show?
I wouldn't say favorite, but I don't know what it is about Kardashians. Like whenever I need to like reference like pop culture and like excess, it's like Kardashians.
That's hilarious.
But I watch a lot of like, yeah, I watch a lot of shitty TV. Yeah. I mean, I always say like, I don't really have the attention for like movies and like long series. I just want like 30 minutes of complete escapism and then back to my laptop.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think my favorite, which I used to call my guilty pleasure, and now I'm like fully embracing it, is The Bachelor and The Bachelorette.
Oh, so good. And then Bachelor in Paradise. It's like, whoa, this is next level. Yeah, no, completely agree with that.
So funny. So funny. All right. You are so fabulous. So just to wrap this up, what is next for you in the Good Fest? Where can we expect to see the Good Fest in 2019?
Ooh, great question. So because this is going to come out in a couple weeks, right? I guess I can probably share because we're so close to, okay. So I'll start with the very next one. That's August 11th, 2018 in Philadelphia. And we have only about 50 tickets left.
Wow.
So yeah, we sold really quickly. Philly was really pumped and we're so happy to be home. That said, we are next going to Austin in early 2019. And that should be complete and finalized and contracted by the time this podcast comes out. And if it's not, but yeah, I think it should be fine. And then from there, we'll continue. I mean, LA was fantastic. We loved it. It's obviously a market that loves wellness. And I think, I don't know when exactly we'll be back, but I could see that in 2019 for sure. We're also toying with the idea of like more pop-up events. So things mm-hmm. that are a little smaller scale, maybe just half days, but same good vibe, same good community, just a little smaller, therefore easier for us to execute on. And then we also lead our retreats. So we had our first one the first weekend of May this year and hope to have another in the fall as well as another one in the spring of 2019. So hopefully two or three of those per year as well. And I mean, definitely heading to the West Coast soon with that, because I think we miss the sunny skies of California.
Yeah. San Diego is a beautiful space. I don't know if you've been here yet, but I am fully supportive of you coming here, retreating, good festing, whatever.
Yeah. I love San Diego.
Yeah. Amazing. Well, so give me all of your deets. What's your URL? What's your social? Give us everything so we can follow you.
Yes. So you can find me at Kate Van Horn on Instagram, kate.van.horn. And then my URL is katevanhorn.com. You can also follow The Good Fest at The Good Fest on Instagram and thegoodfest.com.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much, Kate. This was such a wonderful conversation. And I think that there's just so many beautiful takeaways that you've shared in your life. And I can't wait for people to hear this and experience you because you're just wonderful. So thank you so much.
And you are as well.
Mm-hmm.